Hello and welcome to Unabashed Book Snobbery, the podcast where we gush about George R. R. Martin's A Song of Ice and Fire and invalidate its vapid adaptation, Game of Thrones.
This is where being a book snob is a good thing. Music.
My name is Kylie, and here with me is Julia.
Hey!
The two of us write for thefandamentals.com for fundamentally sound fandom analysis.
What we do.
It's totally what we do. That kind of covers it, too, because our analysis section is awesome.
Yeah.
We have deep dives into media. We also have some news and reviews that gets posted, too, so check us out. I almost went check it out, like Project Voice Bend. That show seeps into my head. That's for anyone who doesn't know it. It's the abridged cut of Legend of Korra, and it's just geniuses who do it.
Yeah.
So
they kind of do the Korra-sami thing a lot more. Like, they weave it through the entire show, not just the last two books.
Yeah, well, because it started out as a joke, and then Korra-sami happened. They're like, all right. Anyway, let's talk about another piece of beloved media to us, which is A Song of Ice and Fire.
You mean the thing that the show is about?
The thing that we gush about, apparently. We are unabashed book snobs, right?
So we are.
We must really like these books.
We do really like these books.
So they must be great and free of problems, right?
Well, obviously you can only like things that are perfect.
Yes, I agree with that.
Yes.
And they can have no flaw. No. Basically, like, it's not exactly hard to figure out that we hate Game of Thrones and we spend a lot of time talking about its flaws. And its flaws are, like, racism and sexism are embedded into the fiber of the show and there's no logical coherence. You know, like, these aren't small flaws. But, you know, we actually get this. This episode has been requested a lot for us to talk about the flaws of the books, too. Which exist.
It's like, you know, you have someone you love, like, who you're in love with. But, like my son, he's got, like, weird-shaped feet. I think they're weird.
What?
Yeah. Like, and I can acknowledge the fact that his feet are weird-looking, but I'll still think that he's a really good-looking kid.
This is not where I thought you would be going with that.
Right?
And, like, I thought you were going to say, like, you could love someone, but then they don't buy the right kind of peanut butter.
Well, that is also true. Like, sometimes, like, you know, you love somebody, and you're like, oh, they're very helpful, but then they buy the wrong kind of peanut butter. And in that moment, you hate them, but you still love them.
In that moment, you say, how could you possibly buy peanut butter that has sugar in it?
Exactly. Like, what were you thinking?
So, let's talk about the soybean oil and sugar of A Song of Ice and Fire.
Yes.
So, this episode is appropriately titled, Is George R. R. Martin Literal Garbage?
He might be.
Because, again, it's farce and vice, right? No room for nuance.
Exactly. Because when, you do something that's not perfect, you are a little garbage.
And, like, some of these criticisms we've at least touched on in some of our open inbox hours, and there's certainly, like, you'll see, I tried to organize them by theme. So, I thought it might be nice, though, if we just started off with general A Song of Ice and Fire, like, problems that people have. Mm-hmm. And then there's a few general that we might close off with, too, if we have time. So, the first is an anonymous said, A Song of Ice and Fire grievance. It's not all set in Dorne.
I like disagree. Like, okay, I would like a series
You're
of books.
Taking this seriously?
No, I would like a series of books that's all set in Dorne. But I think somebody like once like they left or they were talking about us in the context of something else, and they said that you know they're good, but they seem to think that Dorne is more important than it is. And we were just like, no, it's not that we think it's important, it's that we like it. There's a difference.
Right.
Like we don't, like, just adore I don't it. Think that, like saying, like, if this, like, this series isn't supposed to be about Dorne. Dorne is kind of like a sideshow that talks about certain things, but, like, the series is supposed to be about this, like, mythical end of the world war with this, like, supernatural force, right? What the series is about.
Right, like, I don't think Dorne is more important than White Walkers.
No. I just kind of like it more.
I don't even think the Martells are more important than, like, the Starks.
No.
I just happen to really love Dorne.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, I feel like this is just Michael trolling us, honestly.
Thank you, Michael. We love you.
It's my guess. It's my guess. It's an anonymous. However, another one said, many people tend to think George R. R. Martin needs a better editor, and I tend to agree.
I mean, I could see that. I mean, there are many ways, I think, in which he could have been more disciplined, especially in the last two books.
Yeah. It's, like, weird, because I have always said Tolkien needed a better editor, mm-hmm. like a much better editor. And when Tolkien goes off talking about stuff, there's just, I can't bring myself to care. I mean,
what is worse, like Quentin or Tom Bombadil?
Right. And like, that's the thing, because on re-listen, I have always found that Martin's ramblings, even if I didn't care about it the first time through, mm-hmm. especially if I'm listening to it on audiobook, the second time through, I'm like, oh, yeah, okay, I'm into this. I'm glad I know this detail now about, you know, the fingers or whatever it is. But with Tolkien, every time I revisit, I'm like, oh my God, the fucking oily stream. I can't. Like, so, I mean, I agree it could be tightened.
I mean, because like, it's a matter of like, what is a set, like, you know, like we talk about, like, in our ideal visual adaptation of the books, like, we wouldn't, like, we would be sad, but we wouldn't be angry or think it's a bad decision necessarily to cut Dorne, right? Because, like, when you're talking about the essentials of the central story, like, sometimes, like, you know, subplots are the first thing to go. That's just, like, it's like a decision you have to make sometimes.
Well, the adaptational maxims that you should loosely follow are, if you can't adapt it correctly, you just shouldn't adapt it.
But, like, when you're talking about, like, it's kind of what happened with the Harry Potter books, right? Like, when you're at that point in your series where you know that people will read what you write, that's when you tend to lose discipline, right?
Although, A Feast for Crows came out in 2005?
Yeah, but, like, It wasn't like, you know, what it is now, but it was still a very successful series in the genre. Very successful.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
So, like, you know, he didn't have to have, like, something as tight as A Game of Thrones is.
That's
which is very kind of like, you know, it doesn't exactly have blinkers on, but it's just like, it has a central plot and everything is kind of around that central plot and it's kind of going towards a climax, right?
Well, you know, this actually dovetails nicely into the next couple that were just some general, and one of them Danzy brought up of Danzy Reviews. Definitely mm-hmm. check out her YouTube channel. It is awesome. She is awesome.
Yeah.
But she said, like, some might disagree with me, but I've never backed the decision for him to have so many Greyjoys or Quentin. And an anonymous, like, threw that in and said some were kind of boring, like Hota, Connington, Quentin, Victarion. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to justify. So how do you feel those extra POVs fit into what you were just talking about?
Yeah, I mean, the thing is that, like, all those POVs have a clear point, like, especially a thematic point that the author's kind of trying to make. And it's kind of like, you have to make a decision, kind of like, are you sticking to the essentials of the story, or are you allowing yourself to go off on these kind of thematic digressions? And it, like, it's not that there's anything wrong with those POVs, it's just like, is it a lack of discipline that is making you have both, like, you know, like, three POVs in Dorne in, like, six chapters? Or is it, like, a very, like, is it, like, you know, Harold Bloom said about poetry, like, great poetry is, like, you cannot have said it any other way, right? Yeah. So, is it really the case that he could not have told the story of Dorne and Arion without that Hota POV and without that Aerys POV? Like, is it really the case? Or is it just a lack of discipline? And
right.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel as deliberate, certainly, mm-hmm. with all these POVs, especially the multiple Greyjoys. And I know that the theaters have split now.
Yeah.
But
like, it's part of, like, you know, the kind of, like, you know, second act kind of bloat.
Yeah.
That, like, yeah, you don't have that kind of, like, discipline in the story the way you had in Game of Thrones. Or, like, even in, like, you know, in the way that you had, you know, in Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone, it was all, like, a linear story. But by the time you got to the fifth book, there's all this stuff going on and, like, Harry's personal kind of puberty development and all this political stuff and all this, like, school stuff. And it's all kind of, like, it's not so focused anymore and it's not so, like, blah. Or, like, the same way that Redland Media talked about, like, the ending multiplication effect in the Star Wars movies. Yes. Like, in the first Star Wars movie, the story was very disciplined. It was one story, and you had one ending, and everything converged towards it, right? But by the time you got to The Phantom Menace, there were, like, endings all over the place.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point. Yeah. And I think whether I consider this a problem, mm-hmm. what I'll say is maybe a little weird, which is, like, it takes them a long time to write these books anyway, so I would actually rather have all the POVs possible, so I could just, like, really dig into this. Like, as much as I don't really care about the Ironborn, I loved our Ironborn podcast that we did, where we tried to dig into this and see what was there, and I love that we have it. However, I do agree that, like, from another perspective, and a very valid perspective, mm-hmm. yeah, this is gonna reduce engagement. I just happen to be super into this and willing to reread and willing to, like, dig in, but
I think this is, like, always is, like, a problem, especially in speculative fiction where there's world building involved in the story, because, like, you have this entire universe in your head and you want to explore it. That's just natural.
So it's a problem. The problem is in the,
like, I invented the fingers. I want to fucking talk about them, you know. Like, that makes sense.
I'm happy we have what we have.
Yeah, I am.
But, and I'll link my Feast for Crows is the my favorite book, and I'm that person piece that I wrote. But, like, the first time I read Feast for Crows, I didn't really like it, you know? Once I went back, I was like, this is the best book in the world. But, yeah, like,
it's... Those people keep telling me about, like, you know, Ulysses. Like, just read it a few thousand times, and you'll eventually like it. Like, no.
No, don't reread Joy's. Oh, my God. That was, like... All right, let's segue on the next general criticism, and there's many different angles.
Go here, huh? Okay, I'm nervous.
We kind of have to look. There's a general criticism of portrayals of race and racism in Martin's writing, and I want to read an ask that we got first from an anonymous, because I feel like it is an important thing to talk about at the very least, which is, if you're criticizing George R. R. Martin on your podcast, don't bring up racism. I've read a lot of your articles on racism, and I don't think you do a good job. You just say it's racist, but you clearly don't have the knowledge to really get into it. I feel that in the past you were very dismissive of racism in Dorne, and Daenerys' storyline, for the sake of fans of color, don't touch the racism. So, like, yeah, we're both white, you know, I feel like that should be said. However, I'm kind of a little confused at the claim that, like, we just say it's racism, but we don't get into it. Like, we don't just say things and never get into it. We get into everything. So I'm just wondering what the spectrum is that this asker has seen. And that's fine if you come to different, like, if you disagree and you still think we're dismissive with what you've seen. Mm-hmm. But, like, there's been open inboxes where we've talked about, like, racial portrayals and things of that nature. So I'm just a little bit curious about that. Also, I know for a fact, like, Julia, your Orientalism piece has received positive feedback. I don't want to be like, oh, I've got so many black friends. But, like, you know, fans of color are not monolithic. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm sure there are people who disagree with us who are white. There are people who disagree with us who aren't white. But, like, there's also, again, people who are like, yeah, this makes sense. So it's not like, oh, we're coming from this position. I think what's important is that both Julia and I make an effort, or at least I do. I think you do.
I like to think I do.
To listen to the perspectives of people of color when it comes to racism, and especially to women of color when it comes to racism in A Song of Ice and Fire, because so much of us intersects with sexism.
Yeah. That being said, the one thing I don't think we are is dismissive. I mean, we might get it wrong. We might, have a pointed, like, you know, we might reach conclusions that somebody might think are a little tone deaf or just oblivious or privileged, but I don't think that we're dismissive.
And, like, I also think it's important for us to talk about it, like, to just ignore the issue and be like, we can't talk about this. I think that's worse. Like, I want goys to talk about, you know, issues of anti-Semitism. They might get it wrong if they're willing to listen, though. You know, like, my absolute favorite portrayal of a Jew has been Kate Kane, and that's written by Bennett, who is totally not Jewish. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So it's like, no, we are going to talk about this. But just know we're talking about it as two white women. And if we get it wrong, and if you disagree, like, we would absolutely love to hear why and how. And we're, like, want to engage in that, you know? Yeah. So we're going to dive in, but I just wanted to have that preface. Yeah. So Simon sent in an email. He said, could you talk about Orientalism and how it forms in Martin's presentation of associate cultures, at least the first three books? I think the Dornish Theatre in Feast Dance was a conscious apology for it.
The Dornish Theatre in Feast Dance handles this very, very well. The more I think about this, the more I'm a little uneasy about Essos. Because when you think about its function in the narrative, it is like... It's the definition of an Orientalist setting. It's something that is supposed to be impossible to understand for, like, the quote-unquote white people who are the heroes, right?
And Danny is, like... I mean, this is a second part that Simon also asked, but, like, Danny is kind of a white savior trope. Like,
yeah. I mean, it's not even... Yeah. It's not so much white savior. It's... I mean, like, that element is definitely there, but she's kind of like a failed white savior, so there is some kind of, like, you know, exploration of that trope in there. But... Like as a setting, that is its function. It's an Orientalist function. And it's probably at least in some way conscious of that, right? Like, cause when we talk about, like, fantasy tropes in A Song of Ice and Fire and the way that they're, like, challenged, they're not always challenged by not existing.
Yeah.
Right? So I'm not exactly sure how I feel about this vis-a-vis if I think it's problematic. I mean, I don't think it's unproblematic. You know, but I mean, there's no like denying this. I think
the long it's yeah, I'm with you that the longer I sit with it and think about it, it's like, why is this the avenue you're going, and why are we robbed of the associate point of views?
I mean, I definitely think that's conscious.
I think he tried to introduce, you know, as many different viewpoints in like Dance with Dragons in terms of like Danny hearing it and hearing the conflicting things, but yeah, it's all filtered through her lens.
I mean, I think that like as like related to the white savior thing, I think it like Danny's entire storyline is a challenge to the white savior narrative, just because like not even, but just the idea that you have this kind of fantasy hero who comes in and with their virtue saves everything and then they all live happily ever after. Like that's one of the central things in the, like, that's traditionally part of the fantasy genre, I think, that Martin is challenging in the entire series, right? Like,
yeah.
There's the whole, like, white knight thing, where, like, if you have good intentions, you know, like, if you're this perfect honorable knight, you can solve all the problems, like, you know? And
yeah.
Daenerys is supposed to be that on a grand, like, geopolitical scale, kind of just like, you know, like, you know, colonialists are often have that kind of well-meaning intention. Like, there's obviously a lot of economic exploitation that's at the center of colonialism, but that like often well-meaning, like, I will save these people thing is there. And it's just as destructive in the end as, you know, the economic exploitation.
Yeah.
And I do think that's a conscious thing he's trying to say in Essos. But does that erase the fact that it's fundamentally an Orientalist setting? I don't know.
Right. And what's real uncomfortable too, and I understand like it's does no good to speak of roads not taken, but before Grapscrap, we weren't gonna see Dany's rulership of Meereen, right? Like she was just gonna have done it and then be coming back. And maybe in flashbacks we would have gotten some of that messiness, but that wasn't something he actually intended to explore originally. So like I mean, maybe that's part of why he did feel he needed to, like, have these two transition books.
Yeah.
In Gap Scrap. But it's just kind of like, what is he... Like, he's trying to tackle that, but at the same time, you said... I agree with you that there's an intentionality behind not having associate point of views, but what is that...
I mean, just because it's intentional doesn't mean it's necessarily a good decision.
Right, and what is that message that comes out of it?
I mean, like, I think I know what the message is trying to be, that, like... This is a place that she can't understand and she shouldn't be, like, presumptuous and think that she can save it.
But is that the best way to show it, exactly. Rather than, you know, having those point of views being like, this lady's presumptuous, like, you know what I'm saying?
I mean, people say that to her face all the time in the Meereenese Knot.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like, that's what again, the Green, like, Grace is, basically. She's just like, no, you don't get it.
Why couldn't we have her perspective?
Yeah. Well, because she's obviously loved the Green Grace's perspective. And that would give stuff away.
She's obviously the Harpy.
Well, she is, yeah. But, okay.
Yeah, or the, or you know what? The Shavepate's perspective would have been interesting to read. Like, his star's perspective.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's, like, you know, he's obviously of the old ruling class, so, like, I'd want more of a diversity in terms of that. But, like, yeah, I just don't see this has, I think you're right in what he's trying to say, but I don't think the payoff has really been there.
I don't think it will be. I think, like, it's kind of over now. Like, she's made the decision to walk away from it.
And that's a problem.
Yeah.
So, we kind of honed in on Marine a little bit, but, like, what about the Dothraki?
I mean, I don't think we could have had a Dothraki POV, like, just structurally at that point.
No.
But, like, Dany understands the Dothraki and has kind of, like, made that part of her identity in a way that she never has in Slaver's Bay.
That's true.
And I think that, like, you know, like, like, the way that she kind of incorporated that culture into her identity isn't, you know, appropriative. But, like, you know, when she was, like, 13 years old at that point, you know, her character wasn't even that formed. And, like, she was, like, raised by this culture in many ways.
Yeah. But has it, you know, at the end of the day, it's still a horde of, like, you know, savages, like, the trope.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a decidedly racial element to it. Sure. Especially... She's got a family history of slaving, right? And then she's, like, leading them. Or her contingent, anyway. And likely Kalmoro's contingent. Wait, what was... Was that Kalmoro?
That thing is from the show.
Yeah, I know. I just realized that. Is it Cal Jocko? Who found her at the end of Dance of Dragons?
I don't remember, because there's another horde that's, like, in Tyrion's storyline is across the river.
Yeah.
I think that's Cal Jocko. And there's Cal Pono, too. I don't know.
It might have been Cal Pono who found her. Okay, whatever. Yeah. But either way, it's at least leading, like, it seems as though she's going to be the stallion that mounts the world, mm-hmm. right? So, why?
Yeah. I mean, like from a plot point of view, the Dothraki are kind of, like, her base of power. Yeah. And when you think of, like, historical analogies, and you have, like, you know, steppe empires and things like that, and lots of, like, that's kind of a common place that a lot of, like, very large political entities, successful dynasties start, is kind of with these steppe nomad empire things. But that doesn't say absolutely anything about what we're talking about. But,
you know, a big part of the series, too, is that Martin was trying to make this feel realistic while having these fantastical elements in that, like, there's things you can point to. Oh, War of the Roses, you know, that kind of stuff. So history was obviously written by white people that we learn about. Like, that's just how people being raised in the West in, you know, modern times. That's what we're raised with. So I think he also did just lean into, like, you know, these elements that are very believable, that have a basis in our history, but are totally 100% filtered through a problematic lens, right?
Yeah, but Dany isn't, she's not an outsider here with the Dothraki. Like, I'm thinking of the chapters that describe her wedding and the way that, like, the tone of it really reminds me of, like, a Mark Twain travelogue.
Yeah.
You know, just kind of, like, dispassionately kind of describing things that are happening and, like, oh, you know, the Dothraki believe that, like, you gotta kill people at weddings. And she just kind of, like, states it. Be like, yeah, this is what, like, you know, this guy explained to me. And...
Yeah.
But... And, like, that kind of, like, continues. But, like, at this point, like, she doesn't really... Like, there's no, like, travelogue element to her Dothraki stuff anymore. It's just kind of there in the background of her consciousness. Right? Like, she doesn't have to describe it anymore because it's a part of her identity now. And like she's claimed, like, this like very prosperous area as its queen, you know, like, she's queen of Meereen.
Yeah.
But she never stops calling herself, like, a Khaleesi. That's always one of her titles.
Of course, yeah. And, you know, the fandom never stops calling her that because of the fucking show now.
And it probably, like, will be for, like, however long she's a political player, you know.
Yeah. You know, a point that I'm a little hesitant to bring up
mm-hmm.
is that I think we also don't appreciate how much things have changed in 20 years.
Okay.
In terms of our cultural conversations surrounding racism, surrounding sexism, surrounding everything. Like, think about when Game of Thrones was written and published. And I'm not trying to excuse, like, he could have totally, yeah, he could have totally been challenging this stuff. Absolutely. And a different author probably would challenge this stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that the Dothraki, like, sink to the level of, like, background flavor.
No, I think that would be a hard claim to make.
Yeah, I think there is something like to this culture that is supposed to be important, kind of outside of the context of Daenerys and her political development.
Yeah.
But I'm not quite sure what it is.
Yeah, and I think it's obvious that Martin has tried to dig more into tearing this stuff down in A Feast for Crows and
like,
the Dothraki
are, like, the world book goes into this. Like, the Dothraki are something that emerged after the fall of Valyria, when, like, the political kind of cohesion and, like, the diplomatic systems in that part of the world just kind of broke apart. And, like, so they're like, a symptom of, like, political decay in the same way that, like, Robert is in Westeros, you know?
At the end of the day...
Yeah.
I would like a Dothraki point of view.
I would actually. I don't want to know how those people think. Don't like them very much.
I think I would just like... I think a Cersei point of views would be way more helpful than what we got. You know, like, I think this is a problem, 100%. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, the issue is that, like, you can see that intentionality behind it. It's just the results, yeah... Yeah, I feel like you really needed something else.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and you say she subverts the White Savior just because she fucks it up?
Not because she fucks it up, but I mean, it's not like she's a fuck up. It's that it's an impossible thing. Like, you know, like, the Targaryen dynasty is, like, really a story of that. Like, they were trying to unify this continent. And, like, look where we are now, right? 300 years later.
Yeah. I'm not sure that's the most compelling story in the world.
Hmm. I mean, it's only part of the story.
Yeah, it's a story. No, I know. That's what I'm saying. But, like, yeah, it is, I mean, it sounds like she's going to be heading back soon in the books, or at least, like, she's just focusing on the Conqueror aspect, mm-hmm. right? And that's, like, you know, we'll see where it goes, I guess. But I would call the Orientalism of Dany's chapters a problem. 100%. Mm-hmm. No one asked this, but, like, do we want to explain why we think... Because some people have a lot of issues with Dorne, mm-hmm. too. And, you know, like, Arianne is, like, leans into such bad stereotypes because she's sexualized and, like, enjoys sex, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, what does sexualized mean in this context? Like, you know, she's a POV character.
Yeah. And it's a... I think it's that, like, the person who's so othered, she's like the only woman who's like really seems to be, well, no, Ygritte was,
yeah,
like pretty fine with sex to the point where she's like raping Jon, and I don't think he knew that.
Yeah. Or what about Asha? Asha also enjoys sex. Like,
I don't,
I mean, I think people have this opinion because of the Aerys chapter, which is about
100%.
The way he sees her. Which...
Yeah, like, he thinks that she masturbates because she eats peppers. Yeah. Like, it's not...
And, like, it's not even, like, his relationship with, like, you know, sexualized Dornish people. It's his entire relationship with women and how he sees them as these, like, mysterious temptresses. Like, not just Dornish women he sees that way, you don't think.
But oh, 100%.
Just, like, you know, he's just, like, confronted with a woman who's, like, moderately... sexually assertive, and he's just like terrified. And but like does it, like, when you get into her own head, like, she thinks about sex, she clearly enjoys sex, she like, you know, she likes looking at pretty dudes and thinks about how pretty they are, but, like,
well, yeah, like, she, I mean, it's also her, the people that she's fucked before that,
yeah,
she's thinking,
but it's
about
not
this,
like,
with,
you know, like, she propositions her ex-boyfriend, he rejects her, and, like, then she's like, okay, let's move on. You know, like,
okay,
she's not,
like, focus on the task
at
hand.
It's not like she's, like, some kind of, like, she has an uncontrollable libido. And that's clear from the text that she's just, like, you know, she's, like, normal.
Yeah, and, like...
She's just not as repressed as everybody else.
People just did not get the Soiled Knight chapter at all, I think. Because they took his point of view at face value. And she's, like, pulling out every stop and manipulating
him. But, like,
him,
the thing is that that's, like, one chapter out of six at this point that we have.
Yeah.
But that's,
and
like,
that's not a Dornish point of view either. Like, the reason we say he tackles racism more successfully for the Dornish is because when we meet them, they're so othered by mostly Tyrion. But, like, the things we hear about what's going on in King's Landing and how they're received, how Oberyn and Ilaria are received. Yeah. And people like take Oberyn, like, living in the brothel. I think that's, like, everyone's image for Oberyn now in the books.
Yeah.
And Like, no, it's kind of clear he was playing things up when he was in King's Landing. Like, he's obviously had sex a decent amount. He has eight daughters and shit.
With five different women.
He's had his, like, erotic travels, but it doesn't seem to be super...
mostly.
But I just feel like the fandom plays it up way more than the books even hint at.
Well, like, all the show did was take it at face value and then turn it up to 11, right?
Yeah. Right.
Like, it didn't have anything that wasn't in the text, per se. Like, they didn't make shit up. They just, like, kind of just, like, you know...
Ran with it.
Yeah, exactly. Ran with it, like, all the way to the ends of the earth.
Like, here's the implication, and, you know, people are saying Ilaria worships a Lysandre sex god, so, like, obviously she'd live in a brothel, too, and timid sex bores her, right? But what's good about the Dornish chapters is when you're finally at the Dornish point of views, especially in, like, what's the Watcher? When you're just seeing people be people with each other in Dorne, and you're like, oh.
And then you get to,
Ilaria's like a person.
Yeah. And then you get to, like, Varyston thinking about how the Dornish court is full of poison and Quentin must be super savvy.
Right.
And you're just like, footage not found.
And Quentin's point of view is all just like, I'm so scared of women. Like, okay.
Okay, we're kind of blowing our talking, but like that kind of thing that like Essos is basically, all we have for Essos is Tyrion's chapters in A Sword of Swords. You know, like that's all we have.
For Essos?
Yeah.
Oh, you're saying like that's the equivalent. Yeah. Like, right. And I think that's an issue. Yeah. And I think that could easily be addressed. And it's disappointing he didn't.
Yeah. I mean, it's, sometimes I'm a bit of a structuralist. And even if I think the whole thing with, like, the Oriental setting is, like, you know.
But, like, you can't imagine what it would have been like if he had included the Green Graces point of view. And if that was in there, you'd be defending it. Like, we need this because it's, you know. Like,
maybe.
It's impossible to say what this text would have shaped. I'm assuming the story would have, like, been altered in some way. And maybe it's a way that he considered and he didn't feel was the best. Mm-hmm. But it does kind of feel like he's...
No, but, like, I don't know. Like, when you think, like, the Harpy mystery is not that important. It's clearly not that important, like, who the actual Harpy is.
No, of
that's
course not
like a problem. Like that's not a mystery that we're all sitting on the edge of our seats to know. Like
some people.
Well, yeah, but like, so that couldn't have been the reason that the preview wasn't included. I think he was trying to make the point that Essos is not understandable, and he did that pretty well, I guess.
Is that a point worth making, though?
Like, we're talking in circles now. But yeah,
I know we are. Mm. I know we are because we don't really know how to say anything about it. I think it's disappointing on his part, and I think what bothers me most of anything is that it doesn't feel like he's aware of that issue.
Maybe not.
Yeah, but yeah, and then you know we got an ask too that was saying like a big problem in the books for me is world building, and Essos is trope infested with Orientalism, which we agree with, but that the courts in Westeros seem mightily lacking aside from when the Tyrells rock up.
Yeah.
No,
that's not so wrong like enough.
Yeah.
I think like 80% of it at least is just like early installment weirdness.
Yeah, I don't think he thought through like courtly intrigue.
Not just like courtly intrigue even. Like the intrigue that he does fine is just like the like how courts are structured in the way that like, you know, these people's daily lives were like. Like it kind of bugs me how little women sew. Like, so everyone's like, there's a couple of times where, like, Kat is sitting by her father as he's dying and she's sewing. But, like, other than that, like.
We got a bunch of, we got Two-Eyed Crow submitted a bunch, and it was just this very long rant about, specific clothing questions.
Yeah.
Which is like, how are clothes constructed? They don't have printed fabrics. Do the gowns have a waist seam? And it's like just all these things. What was the prominent hairstyle for men? How does Catelyn's style differ from that of other northern ladies? When do kids start wearing gender-specific clothing? How are clothes fashioned? Like stuff that he has never gotten into and
probably never will.
There's no, I doubt it.
These are questions that I have asked. Like,
yeah.
Like, what kind of shoes do they wear? Like, what kind of notions of modesty do they have? Like, what do they do with the hair? Like, that whole thing, like, we talked about, like, something in the costumes, how, like, women in Game of Thrones wear their hair down way too much. Like, is that justified in the text? We don't know because they hardly ever talk about it.
Well, and a lot of this actually ties into women and portrayal of women. Mm-hmm. So this next section of questions is kind of going to be like world building and sexism. So another thing Two-Eyed Crow brought up was the jobs of the small folk. Like, we don't hear about any of this. Like, what degree are their artisans?
Yeah, do they have, you know, do they have, like, a guild system? They mentioned guilds a few times, right?
Yeah, I think, but do they have sculptors? Do they have jewelers?
Yeah, they have goldsmiths. You know, they've talked about goldsmiths, right?
Do they have mines that have anything besides gold?
Yeah, they have steel, so they must iron, they must mine iron. They have copper.
Like, how do different denominations of the faith, like...
Yeah, the faith is...
proselytize.
Faith is unified.
Yeah, like, that's a big thing,
yeah.
I would say.
I mean, we've speculated about, like, divisions kind of along the old kingdom lines and things like that, but, like, there's no evidence of that, really.
My favorite is, do lawyers exist, and can you hire one?
Caroline, did you send this?
I don't think Caroline has a Tumblr blog, Two Eyed Crow, in addition to her cosplay Caroline. Mm-hmm. I think that's her main one. I thought this was excellent too. What do people do who have no access to a maester when they need medical treatment?
They go to the wise woman,
and she like kills them. Well, yeah, basically.
I mean, that's what people used to do.
But there's a lot of world building sloppiness that I think Martin just assumes if we want to like know about that, we would just look at our own history.
Yeah.
Be like, well, this is how this was, this is how it makes sense. But yeah, like there's missing stuff. However, one big thing that's missing, and this is an ask that everyone has hammered on, there are very few women having relationships with other women.
Yeah.
So with the exception of House Tyrell, like, Kat had no ladies. Sansa only had Jane Poole. Arya had no companions. Mm-hmm. There were no, like, small folk wives. Or, this is a cool one, too. No minor lords were ever attempting to make a female relative someone's new mistress of a higher lord, which is a very common thing.
Yeah. I mean, the world book gets into that kind of stuff a little bit.
Yeah. So, like, what do you think of all that with just missing female relationships?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, like, even like Cersei, like, she has like two maids and that's it. Like, what? But yeah, I think it's just like something you didn't think of, like, in like Game of Thrones timeline, and like now it would be weird to add it all in, you know? Like,
well, did he have like doodly companions for the male characters?
Not really.
Yeah, like, that's what I was just thinking, because did Ned have friends?
No. Ned had, like,
Robert.
He had, like, what's his face? Jane Poole's dad. What's his name?
Vance. Right?
I don't think that was his name, but whatever.
It wasn't Vance.
He was the
Poole?
Steward, right? And he had, like, you know, Jory. They were kind of buds.
Yeah, I guess.
No, but, yeah, he doesn't have, like, definitely, like, not anyone. Because, like, you know, companion to, like, important people is, like, an official job.
Vaen Poole.
Yeah.
That's his name.
And Sylva clearly wasn't Arianne's lady in waiting.
Arianne's
because
only ready, yeah,
Marcella had only met her in the Queenmakers, like she's clearly never seen her before. So
yeah, Arianne had like also like I'm pretty sure Tyeen was one of them.
But like there's no evidence for that. Just something I did in my fanfic.
No, but I'd be shocked. Yeah.
If Tyeen's official job wasn't following around Arianne. Yeah.
Sylva was just like a friend of Arianne's who was willing to commit like treason with her. I don't think she was a lady in waiting.
No, she clearly wasn't. Marcella's never seen her before.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, like, I think this is a consideration. It didn't seem like he put any extra effort into male buddies either.
Yeah.
Like, there were war buddies.
I mean, that doesn't really make the problem disappear. It's just kind of like...
No, yeah. But it's
I don't
like,
think
I think
this
it's
is gendered.
More...
It's just he didn't think about how courts work very well.
Right, I think it's just a gendered... Yeah, so another common thing is no personality / nameless women. So, like... Larry Hightower, you know, Alanis Harlaw, you know, Lareza, Mama Martell. Well, we call her Lareza, Mama Martell. Like,
I mean, she has so few little personalities, she doesn't even have a name, so.
Yeah, but all other great house rulers of her generation do have names, which is a bit uncomfortable.
I don't understand why she isn't in the World of Ice and Fire. Just, like, put it in there.
Either.
Just put it, like, they mentioned her once or twice. Just put her in there.
Yeah, Tysha, the wives of Quellon Greyjoy, Ashara Dayne. So, look, I can give you a lot of no personality nameless men also. Like, again, I don't think this is a gendered problem.
Mm-hmm. I mean, no, I think, like, especially with the mothers and things like that, it does, like, go into problem territory. I really do.
Oh, totally. I just think, like, some of these examples, like, the wives of Quellon Joy, Greyjoy, like...
I mean, that makes sense because it's fucking Victorian.
It's Victorian thinking about it, and, like, what would knowing about the wives of Quellon Greyjoy do for us?
Well, it's not even, like...
Like, you get an impression, I feel, of Asha's mother from Asha, but it's like she has a distance to her for a very specific gendered reason also, you know?
Yeah.
So I think sometimes it works.
But, like, how much can we use POV as an excuse? Like, we do it a lot, and are we problematic, you know?
I'm sure we are. Well, actually, like, let's talk about what is very difficult to ignore, which is, it's dubbed the Dead Ladies Club. I forget who in the fandom first came up with this, but someone did. And we've gotten a lot of asks about this, like, Drafi specifically listed them.
Yeah.
From what I understand, the Dead Ladies Club is mostly Elia, Lyanna Stark, obviously, Ishara Dane, Joanna Lannister, Rhaella. Sometimes people throw in, like, Tysha and Mama Martell. And they're like, they're just, these characters are just, like, not really much more than a male fantasy, and they're not very fleshed out, is the argument.
I'm just thinking of not much more than a male fantasy. Ishara and Joanna are kind of that by design, which might be problematic. Yeah, definitely.
We could talk about them in the bigger names in turn, because, like, another big thing too is that John, Dany, and Tyrion all have dead mothers.
Yeah.
Like, why? And all potentially dead mothers that were victims of rape. I don't believe that Aerys is his father, but some people do. Some people speculate that, right?
Tyrion?
Yeah, that he's a secret Targaryen.
No, he's not. The fact that he's Tywin's son is kind of important, guys.
Well, he's Tywin's son, even if he's adopted.
I'm just thinking, how many fathers are there who died in battle? Not that many. Rhaegar.
Rhaegar. Stefan. Yeah.
John Arryn didn't die in battle.
He didn't die in battle, but he died.
Because the equivalency that there's always between, like, men die in battle and die in childbirth, right? Like, numbers-wise.
Rickard?
Kind of.
Rhaegar. Stefan. Right? Was he battle?
Stefan died in a boat.
Well...
I mean, because just like you say, like, you know, so many women are dying in childbirth. That's not necessarily stupid. I mean, women did die in childbirth in pre-medical ages. Like, that would...
Are you talking about specifically...
Yeah.
Lyanna and Rhaella?
Lyanna and Rhaella. Joanna died in childbirth, too.
Joanna, yeah.
Ishara had really bad postpartum depression, probably. That kind of counts.
Elia was fridged. We can talk about her. Yeah.
Well, she was definitely fridged, but I think she was fridged well. if that makes any sense.
We're very forgiving.
No, but, like, it's definitely of that trope, but tropes aren't necessarily a bad thing. Like,
I think, not all tropes are evil, but this is a pattern, right?
You had that piece about, like, how to kill a lesbian. It's not that lesbians aren't allowed to die ever. You know, that's not the point.
Oh, Julia, don't tell that, because right now the dialogue is like, lesbians are not allowed to die ever. I agree with the piece that I wrote at the time, obviously. I still feel that way, but yeah.
No, it's not that, like, women can never die in childbirth, especially, like, mothers dying in childbirth. That's a thing that makes sense in this world. And it's not that, like, you're never allowed to have a female family member who was horribly murdered that you feel really badly about 15 years later. You know, that's, like, that's not allowed. It's just how you do it and the degree to which you do it, the point that, like, is it a pattern? Right.
Yeah, and I mean, like, if we want to talk about the dead father club, like, Aerys is a very, like, that's a prominent father figure for Dany, because, like, Dany's mom is dead, but her dad's dead too. Yeah. Like, you know what I'm saying? With Jon, both his parents are dead.
And, like, Ned as a dead father is very significant, clearly. But he definitely had his own story. Like, he's not, you know, he's not in the same category, I think, as, like, you know, Elia or Rhaella.
But actually, Kat gets tossed out a lot as, like, oh, she's a horrible revenge monster now. And that's sexist.
I don't think I agree with that. I mean, I'll have to think about it, but I don't think I agree with that.
I'm not sure I understand the argument why that's sexist. Like,
I mean, I can kind of see how, like... Like, her men's got killed, and that's all she cares about, I guess.
So they were fridged, and now she's mad. Like, what? Isn't that the reverse, right?
Yeah. But, you know, the way that people talk, sometimes people discuss kind of, like, despite, like, what she says at certain points, like, she does care about, like, Rob. being dead more than she cared about Sansa and Arya being in danger, for example. Like, to an extent. I don't, like, it does disturb, like, Rob did the same thing. It did kind of disturb me the way they kind of, like, wrote off Sansa as soon as she was married off.
Yeah.
As a lost cause.
Yep.
You know, like, it's horrible what was done to her, but, like, we're not, like, they weren't really willing to, like, think that she was redeemable from that situation. But that, like, that's not a problem with Martin. That was clearly for effect with the characters. And that was clearly, like...
And for the system,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean...
So, I don't know if we've gone off topic again, I think.
No, I don't think so, because this exploration of the patriarchy all ties into all of this.
I know, but, like, at some point we'll be using that as an excuse. Have we reached that point yet?
I think for lack of female friendships, yes, it's a problem. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people actually extend this. Like, there's male friendships in the male POVs now, but there's not a ton of female friendships other than, like, Asha's maybe fine with the Mormont who's keeping her prisoner. Like,
yeah.
Like, where are the female friends? Arianne and Silva, who she got arrested?
Yeah, and
married off to some old dude. Yeah, like, where are these female friendships?
Yeah, and like, female relationships that she did have, she's kind of distanced herself from now.
Yeah, and like, the women who are, like, all friends with each other are, like, side characters that we're annoyed by.
Yeah.
Like, the Tyrells. And, you know, at the time, I do think that there's an exploration, where women are in competition with each other,
mm-hmm.
but like that doesn't cover all of this, you know, like that covers part of it, and that covers some of the female isolation that we see, but
yeah.
Like it does not need to be this extent. Like there need to be more female friends, 100%.
Yeah, I mean, I think she's like with Sansa and Miranda Royce, I think that's certainly getting there.
I like that. Yeah. I like what's going on with Sansa so much. Arya, I wouldn't say
she's the rescue from
friends.
Sexual harassers.
Oh my god.
Miranda's like, thanks. They were really annoying.
Thanks, he was terrible. No, Arya, like, doesn't have friends.
Arya
but
doesn't have friends,
getting,
period.
She was getting along with those daughters.
Yeah,
well.
Very well.
Yeah, she really liked them. She seemed to like Mercy and hanging out with them. So,
yeah.
Like, it's getting better.
Yeah, I think so.
But yeah, in the first three books, this was 100% a problem. Mm-hmm. Like, not even a question. Cersei only has Tyena, which is weird.
She should be surrounded by women at all times, like barges.
But Cersei also hates women.
Yeah.
So like, it's kind of difficult.
No, but like Brienne, people would think that's really weird. Like people would be talking about it.
I think Brienne lacking female relationships is purposely done.
Yeah, it's like because like her one previous female companion was on a horrible septa.
And then when she's like with Kat, and she's emboldened by what she sees with Kat,
mm-hmm.
and they have a strong affection for one another, but like half the point of Brienne is that she doesn't fit in as any gender role.
Yeah.
Right, like I'm trying to think of other female POVs, like
Sansa, Arya,
we got the big ones.
Yeah.
I mean Kat should have had ladies in Winterfell.
Oh, definitely.
100%. Like I don't know what he's doing with that. But yeah, like, of course I would love to see more of this, but I also think we are getting more of this. Oh, Dany, duh. Oh my god.
She, like, I know, they talked about it a little bit, Art the Anons did in the previous section, how, like, her handmaids kind of, like, ciphers and...
Sure, but, like, do they have personalities?
Yeah, they're ciphers, I said, like, they don't. I mean, I couldn't tell you, like, one way in which Eri is different from Jaqiri, like...
That's
one of the
problem.
Things that, like, one of the Blood Riders is really hot, and the other one's like, no, he's too skinny or whatever. But I don't think that's a personality thing.
Dany needs more women around her. I mean, yeah. I get that she likes her 8-year-old scribe, but, like, that's not, you know, a female friendship. And then Quaithe sometimes pops up and is like, hey, friend.
She's got the green grace.
You're gonna die.
They're buddies.
Yeah, they're real tight. No, I mean, like, that's an issue for Dany, too.
Yeah.
This is an issue. I think in Asha's case, it actually makes the most sense.
That she would have mostly boy buds.
No. Yeah. Just one of the guys.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, like, I think the pattern is getting better, but like, yeah, what the fuck?
Mm-hmm.
What is this? For the Dead Ladies Club, I'm a lot more forgiving than I think the rest of the fandom.
I mean, yeah, I mean, there are a few too many mothers who are merchants, I think. Like,
yeah.
But that might be trying to make a point. Like Victarion, it makes perfect sense. Victarion would never give a single thought to his mother because he's just such a fucking misogynist.
What is the deal, though, with both Danny, and like Danny was, you know, born of rape,
mm-hmm.
likely. I'm assuming, you know, Lyanna and Rhaegar's not exactly free of problems and power dynamics, even though we try to give Lyanna as much agency as we can with, like, prophecy stuff and, like, them being into each other. But, you know, we still got a 15-year-old and, like, a prince that's 10 years older than her. And then, I guess Joanna and Tywin were fond of each other.
Okay, yeah.
That was just, she died in childbirth. Like, yeah, man. It's uncomfortable.
Yeah.
It's uncomfortable. Red X negative asked us, hey, what do you think about how George R. R. Martin set up Arya and Sansa in the Game of Thrones? A lot of people criticize him for it, especially how it cast Sansa in a bad light in contrast to her. And it seems to be that there's no other sibling rivalry between male Stark siblings. This has always been a tense subject. I mean, he's right. Red X negative is correct. This is a tense subject in the fandom.
Yeah. I really don't understand the argument that that Sansa is cast in a bad light in a Game of Thrones. I never thought she was.
Yeah, I don't. I never got that
seems
either.
To be like the consensus, so there must be something to it.
Honestly, I think it's people. Like, I think it's sexist dialogue playing into it, though. Like, Arya's the action girl and she can do shit, and Sansa can't, so she's.
I mean, Arya's introduction is all about how she's upset that she's not like Sansa.
Uh huh. Which is relatable.
And Sansa's introduction is all about how she's afraid that Arya will embarrass her in front of the important people.
Again, relatable. Dudes, this was my life. I was the non, like, feminine sibling with a perfect older sibling. Like,
I mean, I suppose you can argue that Arya, like, little thing is more sympathetic than that Sansa thing, because, like, Arya is always like, oh, poor me.
But, like, Sansa's also like, hey, let me just solve all my family's political problems by saying, I don't know what happened on the King's... Like, you know what I'm saying? I don't see Sansa in a negative light in a Game of Thrones at all. She was young. Mm-hmm. She had a lot of misconceptions about reality because, you know, she was kind of raised by a septa with some really weird ideas about us. But, like...
People do forget how young Sansa is.
Well, is it, like, a problem that, like, oh, John and Rob, or John and Bran, or Rob and Bran, or Bran and Rickon, like, they all get along?
Yeah. I mean, like, John and Rob have issues that they both kind of refuse to acknowledge, because, like, they do love each other. But so do Arya and Sansa.
Yeah, they do. It's just... Man, like...
I mean, Joffrey and Tommen had problems, because Joffrey was a psychopath who, like, kill Tommen's pets.
Jesus Christ. Yeah, and Marcella and Tommen got along. Yeah. I'm trying to think if there's sisters that get along, but I guess the Fowler twins get along.
Yeah, they get along a little too much, as far as I can tell.
Yeah.
I know, the Sand Snakes all get along.
I'm just not willing to see this as being an element and being like...
Jaime and Tyrion got along until Jaime told Tyrion that he, like, had his wife gang-raped. Or was complicit in that.
Honestly, I'm just not willing to look at Arya and Sansa's dynamic, especially given how much they are paralleling each other and how it's probably going to be kind of nice when they reunite, like, I'm assuming.
They'll be smirking the whole time, yeah.
Yeah, I just can't really, like, shut up. I can't get over that. I don't think Arya in the books is going to threaten to cut Sansa's face off and wear it, so... But I just am saying, I can't look at that in the books and read it and be like, wow, this is some sexist bullshit. To me, it's just like, yeah, this is, you know, I mean, maybe it's just my own projection. It just doesn't seem like a problem to me. I'm sorry. It doesn't. Do you disagree?
I know you're a lot more invested in this relationship than I am.
Mm-hmm.
But
you don't seem to like Arya as much as I do.
I think she's fine. I don't know. I'm just thinking about...
I'm gonna cut your face off and wear it. I'm sorry. I was just remembering that. Oh, God. While you're mulling that over, let's talk about Cersei. She was not introduced at a point in her arc where we can sympathize with her, and then she spirals downwards.
Okay. Well, we talked about how it's a little weird that Jaime gets a redemption arc. Cersei doesn't, right?
I think we consider it less of a redemption arc than most people.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure it's weird. I think it's just like, this is what happened. If Cersei was the only female point of view, that would be a major issue. Mm-hmm. But, like, honestly, some of the Cersei dialogue about, like, this is sexism reads closer to Earth to me.
Well, for sure.
Like, why can't Cersei have... Why can't women spiral downwards? Like, why don't they have that latitude? Why is it sexism every time, like... I mean, yes, The fandom perception about Cersei was confirmed true, whereas Jaime got the benefit of the misconceptions being torn down, right? Generally speaking.
Yeah, was the fandom perception of Cersei proved true?
I have no idea, actually.
I mean, I think she seemed a lot more competent before we had her point of view.
Yeah.
I think that might make the problem worse. Whatever the problem is. And,
I think it just bothers me that, like, across every single female point of view, with every single trajectory of the arc, mm-hmm. there is one of someone who is repugnant. And yeah, she spirals downward and because she's super paranoid and stuff. And, you know, even that, Martin does a perversion of wish fulfillment with her walk. He does a major issue of, like, tearing into that to show us kind of her very unhealthy worldview mm-hmm. and how the patriarchy and her abuse shaped her. And it's tragic, but this is the one female point of view with, like, this much ugliness, I guess, in yeah. it. And, like, people see it and they're like, oh, sexism. And it's like, are you kidding me?
I think that he was trying to build, this is going to be unpopular. He was trying to build a parallel with Tyrion. Because
I was actually just thinking Tyrion, that because I was thinking about downward spirals.
Yeah, Tyrion has a lot in common with his sister.
Oh my god, so much.
And I don't see him behaving much differently in her position. And
I think her internalized misogyny mm-hmm. against his internalized ableism is like a fascinating
but
comparison.
But the thing that he is, the one way that he is different than Cersei is that he's way more intelligent.
He's smarter, yeah. And like, so that sucks yeah. that it's a stupid woman, but there's also lots of really smart women.
I mean, like, and when you like think about his political arc in A Clash of Kings, like, he wasn't that much more successful than she was.
No, he's just fart sniffing.
And there's a lot of fart sniffing going on. And
I'm so clever to have realized, you know, mm-hmm. what was going on with Marcella and who is reporting to the Queen. I'm so smart.
Yeah.
Okay, dude.
The fandom, like, seems to think that he did really well there, too. But yeah.
I know! Like, everyone takes that at face value. I'm like, but, dude, no, he didn't actually learn anything. Yeah,
like, what did he actually accomplish there anyway? I mean, he got his niece out of harm's way for a little while. Maybe that's it.
And then he, like, still had to follow through on his one shitty plan to, like, give Dorne all the kingdom. Yeah, we were talking about something very specific in A Clash of Kings, but yeah. I totally agree with you that Cersei parallels Tyrion. Yeah. It's just, she's kind of had her comeuppance in a way that,
And how would that, how is that different than that whole thing where she got rid of most of the, crown's debt by giving the faith, like, a stupid amount?
I mean, it's a bad idea to arm zealots, mm-hmm. but it also was a very here and now problem.
Exactly, and Tyrion kind of solved the same problem. Like, he gave a good deal of resources away to Dorne. He kind of, like...
For free.
For free, basically. Because, like, maybe he, like, didn't realize that they weren't going to side with Renly ever, but, like... And, like, that was just to solve his very immediate and very kind of, like...
Petty. It wasn't a petty problem.
It was a problem that was really only a problem for him. You know?
Yeah, personal. It was a personal problem.
And, like, Cersei at least was just, like, getting rid of a debt. Which affected everyone. I don't know. But, like... the fandom and even the narrative to some extent gives Tyrion a benefit of the doubt, specifically, I think, because he's male and he doesn't fall into this particular trope. I mean, there's other tropes that Tyrion, like, because of his disability kind of falls into, you know?
I don't even think Cersei falls into a particular trope
either. No, she's the evil queen trope, so that's what she is.
I mean, very generally speaking.
Yeah.
But we have her point of view, mm-hmm. like... You don't get the point of view of the evil queen, usually.
She is that scheming consort who seeks to, like, you know, use the men around her to wield her own power. That's her character.
Yes, she does. And what Martin does is explore why.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's because of this internalized hatred of herself and her gender.
But I think it's that trope that people don't like more than what Martin does with it.
And I feel like that's just kind of being very dismissive of her, which reads to me as sexist in a, like, infantilizing kind of way.
I think that, like, comparing her to Tyrion is the most fruitful thing way to look at this. Even though we're not doing a very good job of being fruitful about it. Cause
we're not being fruitful.
We're just laughing at Tyrion in Clash of Kings.
oh my god. And, like, what's hilarious too is, not hilarious, just like what shines through the most is how Tywin treats him mm-hmm. versus Cersei. Cause like whatever fan fiction you've been watching, Tyrion was like praised for Blackwater by Tywin. He was rewarded for it. And Cersei is meanwhile like ordered out of the room.
Yeah, like when she's just like, I kind of object to this whole thing where you're treating my vagina like a baseball card. Get out. Like that's what happened. Yeah.
And this happens twice mm-hmm. that there's two conversations where Cersei's trying to raise objections and Tywin's like, okay, get out. Cause we need to talk now. So like, it's just very interesting to see that.
It's not like it's because he likes Tyrion. You know?
Yeah. So like a journal for the Wanderer is the one who submitted mm-hmm. that. And like, we're not trying to be dismissive of that there is a trope. It's just we happen to find Cersei's, like, the deconstructing Cersei incredibly fruitful.
Yeah.
And incredibly feminist. At least I do.
Okay.
Because I think without Cersei, like, the whole exploration of the patriarchy would be super incomplete, right?
Oh, for sure.
Like, yeah, so I'll just very much defend her and her role in the books. Mm-hmm. And I'll link our Cersei Lannister podcast.
Do you think it would have been better if we had a point of view from her at the same time we had one from Jaime? For example, if she was starting in a Storm of Swords instead of Winter Crow.
Oh, totally. But I also kind of feel like Martin, I'm just very forgiving of like his planning process, I think.
Yeah, but.
Cause like, she came about as a result of Gapscrap, right? As a point of view. And then he's like, okay, I can lean into
this. But Jaime didn't? Isn't that a problem?
Yeah. No, it's a problem. I'm not saying that's not a problem. Hmm. I'm just like, again, a bit more forgiving of it. I don't know why.
He has the benefit of the doubt because he's clearly fucking trying.
Yeah, maybe that's it. And I feel like he would have at least understood this aspect of her personality. Mm-hmm. You know, he says when he writes her chapters, he feels like he needs to shower afterwards. And people are like, oh, that's sexist asshole. It's like, no, like she's kind of a horrible fucking person.
And if he said the same thing about Victarion, I think I would feel better. But because he's clearly like a worse person than Cersei even is.
He said Victarion's a brute,
yeah,
but
that he's dumb as a stump, I
think. He said he loves all of his point of view characters, but, you know, I'm assuming he also wasn't, like, skipping around happily when he's writing Tyrion raping the slave, you know? I would like it if he said more things, but I just, he does have the benefit
of the
doubt.
Like, the man can't say anything. Like, I have sympathy for him there. But, like, remember he said something, like, 5 years ago? Like, that's, like, this is why there's sexual assault in my books. Every time there's a sexual assault on the show, people trot that out again.
Oh my god. Well, actually, let's get into that. Cause someone said, like, I'll skip down to it. I'm sorry, I didn't organize this well. But would we be willing to talk about Martin's use of violence, both sexual and otherwise? Because a lot of people have complained it's gratuitous and just there for shock value.
So this is what he actually said about sexual assault in his books. He said basically that, like, it feels disingenuous and dishonest to him to have, like, a war being fought in this kind of context without there being sexual assaults.
But it's only against women. Until he, like, gets into Aaron's point of view, I guess.
But, like, he's making, like, a non-stupid version of the Brian Cogman, like, reality of this particular world argument, basically. That, like, basically any kind of war, like, especially medieval-type war, that doesn't have, like, women being raped left, right, and center, is glorifying it, basically. Like, that's something that always inevitably resulted from those kind of conflicts, and it kind of has to be shown when you're depicting it, or else it's disingenuous. That was his argument, basically. I definitely think he has a point. Whether or not you think that his depiction is the best way to go about making that point is what we'll be discussing now.
Well, I mean, there should have been more, like, issues with sexual assault at the wall within the Night's Watch, you know?
So your solution to this problem is more sexual assault.
No, I'm saying, like, I'm saying that the sexual assault he depicts mm-hmm. is very specifically gendered.
Yeah, I mean, like, no, you do have a point there. Just, like,
it's
just
like
as disingenuous.
This reality, but not this reality.
Yeah, it's just as
right?
disingenuous to have a situation like you have at the wall.
Yeah. So it's like, I mean, maybe that's just not him thinking it exactly. through, but that's an issue to me. Also, I think what the Anon said is, like, I agree to a point. Even though there is a commentary they're attempting, some of the violence seems a bit too much and implausible, even for a, quote, medieval setting.
I mean, like, some of these, like, this, like, kind of, like, stories that you're told in the book, like, mm-hmm. you know, that the story with, Cheswick, about, mm-hmm. like, the innkeeper's daughter. It's just, like, it's so, like, it's, like, the worst thing I've ever heard in my life. Like, seriously, like, just, like, that story is so, like, violent.
It's
like,
be.
No, it's like, that story is just, like, everything about, like, you know, like, the patriarchy and the class system and feudalism just all like kind of concentrating themselves and like bombarding this like one woman who does at least get a name, you know? And just, it's so horrible, and like Arya's listening to it, and all she can think of to do in response is to like commit a violent act of her own, you know? Like, and
there's not much solving that any other way, like in that moment. What else would she do?
But like, and like, just like one of those, just like when like Lord Bracken is just talking about like, I need recompense because the mountain took my castle and burned it down and raped one of my daughters, and just like there's always like, and like Brienne is just like getting all these like casual rape threats all the time.
Or like the Greyjoy's shield party.
Yeah, where it's just like and like we can say that like in that particular case, it makes perfect sense from the point of view that it was just completely glossed over. And like Arya just is not in any kind of position to process it. She just knows that she's outraged. And just like you can always like there's like
it always makes sense. Yeah. It's never disingenuous to the setting, but it's like why? Why is it this focal? Why is it this much of a focal point? Yeah.
It's the pattern. That's
I don't agree with things like counting every mention of rape and saying that like this is so bad because there's this many mentions.
I mean, but there's a point where like you say something so much it loses all impact. Like that Cheswick story was extremely impactful. You know, like something like Lawless's rape was extremely impactful.
Yeah. Well, people have issue with Lawless's rape because we don't get her point of view. It's like it's more or less a litmus test for how people act for it. Like Cersei doesn't give a shit. Sansa's horrified, you know.
But like, is that a problem? Especially like given the fact that like you know this is a disabled character.
Yeah, and I think what Martin does best with Lawless's gang rape is that he doesn't let us forget the implications of it, and he doesn't like we're never allowed to just forget it happened. Yeah. You know, she's brought up multiple times. We see like how this is unfolding. We see the ridiculous horribleness with Bronn. Like it was a quote-unquote background rape, but he did what he could, I think, in that case.
And you're kind of ignoring the fact that he made it happen in the first place there.
Yeah, no, I know. I'm saying like it happened, but then like at least the fallout was treated with that gravity.
I mean, like his argument for why it happened is probably just like it's stupid that there was that riot and not a single noble woman was raped. Right, like that's probably what he was saying. It was just the same, like thing he says about the battle. Like if you have a big, huge battle, it's stupid if none of your major characters are killed. Right,
and like especially like yeah, she was disabled character who got raped, but then also that's a person who would have a lot of violence concentrated around her. Like that, if you are a disabled woman, it's more dangerous for you.
And that's a science fact.
I mean, I don't think that excuses it. Yeah. It's not like I enjoy reading about it. You know,
but like we've been saying this the whole time, like you can see that he's trying to achieve something that's worthwhile and that makes you more forgiving than maybe you should be.
His greatest success when it comes to sexual violence is Jane Poole's storyline and the way that we're not allowed to forget her, even though she has the wrong last name, so everyone else is forgetting about her, right?
But even in Jane Poole, like she doesn't get a point of view either. It's no, all contextualized that's horrible, but by Theon.
But at least he's trying with it, you know? Like, yes, it's through Theon's eyes, but Theon is a mutual victim. Like, it's there's a sensitivity about it.
Well, there is. I mean, like is the wrong word, but, like, I think that storyline was very successful. And I think that,
I found it effective.
Yeah, like Theon's arc as a victim, like, not like, of sexual and just, you know, garden variety violence is also very successful.
Yes.
And kind of, like, the way that victimization and gender kind of work together in that arc is very interesting. There's no denying, there's, like, a lot of fucking rape in Westeros, and it's omnipresent in a way that, like, is just constantly oppressive, and kind of oppressive in a way, kind of way that many women can relate to. Like,
and, like, rape victims, we don't get Jane's point of view. We don't get Lawless's point of view. We are in Tyrion's point of view as he rapes the slave. Yeah. Like, why? I get that rape is present, but Jesus Christ, why do we need it like this? I mean, George R. R. Martin said he will never rape a character like
apparently
who we're
he
reading.
Said that. I can't find the actual thing that he said. But yeah, like I've heard people say that he said that. So, and just like things like just.
But, like, no, I mean, Harkoon Michael mentioned this, too, to us. Like, Tyrion in A Dance of Dragons, like, the sex slaves are totally a framing device for his story.
Yeah.
Like, this is an issue.
they're just like, apart from like basically Arianne and Asha, sex is kind of like, and Daenerys, but only like in A Dance with Dragons, basically. Sex is like something that even like female characters, like it's kind of, it's like never a positive thing for them, you know, like Kat likes having sex with Ned, I guess, but like he's dead so soon. Like, you know, she has that like one basically positive sex experience.
Yeah.
And like when she thinks about her marriage and like the earlier years of her marriage, like, you know, the sex is kind of scary there. Like you can tell like it's not something she enjoyed.
Maybe part of the reason I'm a little more forgiving is that there does seem to be, it's getting better mm-hmm. in terms of a pattern.
I'm definitely thinking about it a lot more.
And the intentionality behind A Feast for Crows. Someone actually once said, I think it was in Yara Snow on Westeros.org boards. I think it was her. I can't quite remember. But they actually said the theme of A Feast for Crows could almost be rape. Like, that is how much it is in your face. But there is such an intentionality behind it, and there is such a leverage of female voices in A Feast for Crows. And I feel like I'm not particularly forgiving. I do think there are times that Martin, he could cut it out and nothing would really be lost in translation, you know?
No, he does have a point about, like, the same way that he has a point about, like, having a big battle and not having any characters that, you know, die. He has a point about, like, there being a war and nobody being raped. Like,
sure, but the point is very specifically gendered. Yeah. Like, again, male victimization, it happens in this book. Theon is wildly successful in the exploration of that, but it's not as much as it realistically would, right? So why is it that, like, every time women need to be punished, yeah. that's what's realistic, but that kind of thing doesn't exist for men. I mean, he does what he can. I mean,
the one thing that people talk about, like the one thing that you can say that, like, you know, people don't like to talk about rape, but one thing that they like to talk about less is rape when men are the victims. So I think this is really a reflection of the author's point of, like, author's biases in that way.
Right, like, I feel like he hasn't...
No, like, because, like, the point about the wall and just the lack of, like, any even hint of that going on at the wall is just, yeah.
And I think some of this is just stuff he hasn't considered, mm-hmm. to be perfectly
honest. But
the
fact honest, that he didn't that consider is it is kind of...
You're right, that's an issue. Yeah. I'm saying that's an issue of his lens. Yeah.
But it's an understandable, it's understandable that somebody like George R. R. Martin would have that particular blinker on. That's not an excuse, it's just...
He's not flawless, he does what he can, but he is limited by his own lens, of course he is.
And that's
and his own lens is...
For sure.
Right, it's definitely getting better, and his own lens is also like, you know, a dude in his 60s. Mm-hmm.
Which is
a white dude.
Which is also not an excuse. Which is why I say, like, it's clearly getting better. Like the thing about, like, you know, pederasty. That's something that he's clearly thinking about now.
Yeah.
In a way that he definitely didn't when he conceived what life is like after the wall.
No, I'm not saying it's an excuse. I'm saying it's a reality of reading this series. Yeah. You were reading the words of a straight white dude in his 60s. Mm-hmm. Like, and he's trying, and he seems to listen a bit.
Yeah, he does a lot better than most other dudes in their 60s, that's for sure.
There's some things he's, like, I wish he would listen a little bit more in terms of, like the dialogue about Sansa and the fandom, and I think he really does sometimes make these dumbass comments that just, like, open the door for all this hate.
But, like, as a writer, he does have to insulate himself from fandom dialogue, I think. Like,
no, I get that. I get that.
Like, he just might be, like, blissfully unaware that this shit is going on.
While we're talking about sexual violence, though, let's talk about Dany and Drogo, because he kind of... Yeah, okay. We do. And Harkon raised this one as well, but, I mean, I would say this is a problem. Yeah. Because he did play Falling in Love with Your Rapist straight. I don't give the show props for anything ever, but the reason they portrayed it so differently in the show and the pilot, where it was obviously just Dany being raped, is they aged up her character and they said it felt very weird to us to film it in this situation and not have it be, like, obviously problematic.
I mean, like, what that story is Dany, like, coping, basically. Like, she manages to find, you know, some happiness and some agency in, like, a shitty, shitty situation where, like, we later learn she was basically just sent off to die, right? And, like, she manages to torture agency out of that situation. And, like, the show did this a little more starkly than the books did, but, like, the turning point is her taking control in a sexual situation, right? Like, she's on top one day. And that was kind of the turning point for her relationship with Drogo and her relationship with the Dothraki and kind of, like, in her political development as well.
Yes.
That's a little weird, right? It's something.
I just...
And then she's pregnant, too.
Yeah.
Like Rhaego was clearly conceived at the time she was on top.
I just don't think he does enough to, like, obviously make it clear that her point of view is flawed.
Yeah.
That's my thing.
Because, no, just, like... Because she does, like, end up gaining so much from her time with the Dothraki. You know, mm-hmm. so much, like, power in every sense.
And sense of identity in yeah. a way, too.
Because, like, even, like, at the end of that book, like, you know, she walks through the fire and she's not burned, you know? Like, even though her hair does burn off.
I just wish they had played her relationship with Drogo differently or just made it more obvious that there was this was an exploitative situation. Like, yeah, but I think that's what it is. It just
like Dany doesn't see it as especially exploitative. It's just something that happens to you and that sucks, but it's not like it's not anything that different from what she expected when she thought she'd be married to Viserys, right?
Do you think that he does a good enough job of explaining that lens, no. though, or of showing that lens. Right. Like, that's what I'm saying. I think yes, this is one of the major problems. Yeah.
Just like Kat was just like, you know, she expected certain things from her marriage to Ned, and she's happy that it turned out better than she expected, basically. Right? But she's just like, oh, yeah, yeah. He's going to have bastards. That's the thing that's going to happen. He's going to leave me for months at a time and go off and fight. He's going to, like, just have...
Patriarchy brain. He's
just going to have dutiful sex with me, and it won't be so bad. It'll be fine. And she's just like... And then, like, you know, 15 years later, she's like, yay, I enjoy sex with my husband. What a wonderful thing that I never expected would happen. I'm so happy.
You know, like, sometimes I worry we get more out of it than Martin intended in terms of, like, patriarchy brain and stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I think that if you are a good enough character writer, that's inevitable.
Yeah.
That your characters, like, it's not like your characters, what your characters say don't come from you, but like you don't always realize what your characters are saying. And if your characters are well-rounded enough. I just can hear
how hesitant we are to like say bad shit about stuff that was like obviously not well
done. Yeah, no, but like. No.
But like I was thinking about our patriarchy brain episode mm-hmm. too. We, obviously female point of views and what Martin does with patriarchy really works for yeah. us, and we find it really engaging. But I kind of sometimes I feel like it's accidental on his part.
Yeah, well, there's accidental, at least and then the there's extent. Incidental. Like,
it's not incidental, yeah. but it's I think just the extent that we're like very. I don't know. I mean, honestly, we need Winds of Winter mm-hmm. because we're saying the pattern's getting better, but like we need another book at this point.
Yeah,
and I hate to be that person. It's just we super need it.
We've like, needed it for quite a while.
All right. So while we're talking about like sex and sexuality and sexual violence, I got a ton of people saying talk about his like relationship, like lesbian and LWLW relationships in the books. I guess there's no good adjective to describe it. I mean,
I think it's like
his femme slash.
Yeah, but like his femme slash, you can tell was written by a straight dude. But, like, a straight dude who's actually trying, maybe?
As a femme slasher, as a bi woman.
Okay.
Like, I mean, I'm sorry. He was not trying with that Dany Erie scene. Like, I don't know what the fuck that was.
She was masturbating, then Erie woke up, and he's just like, okay, let's finish.
Yeah, like, we described it before as, like, the college girl gay experience, mm-hmm. right? But, like, I think at the time we said, I don't see a payoff for this. And I still, like, if the point was her power dynamic with the Dothraki, that there wasn't a follow-up. It seemed to just be about her thinking about Dario. Yeah. And if the follow-up's her getting hot and bothered, why did she need this to happen? Like, why did this exist? So, like, no, he was not trying with this scene. I don't know what this was. I don't know why he thought it was necessary, but maybe I'm wrong and she'll, like, have a female lover down the road.
No, it's not.
And this was
you think that's the only possible payoff that would be considered.
No, but payoff? I don't see, like, I just don't see it.
I don't think, like, Dany doesn't see, like, you know, sexuality in those, like, very kind of heteronormative terms. Like, that's not something, like, it is and isn't. What am I trying to say?
What?
No, what am I trying to say?
I have no idea what you're trying to say.
No, like, I don't see how important it is from Dany's point of view that Erie is a woman in this case.
I don't see how important it is from Dany's point of view that this happened, period.
Yeah, okay.
Because the thing is,
this just she's just like, okay, I have a thing for Dario. Maybe if I sleep with Eerie, that will go away. Maybe I'm just horny. And then she's like, she has sex with her, and she's like, no, it's not just I'm horny, I have a thing for Dario, right?
But it was done in such a way, like, Danny didn't seek Eerie out. Eerie just went for it.
No, but there are two scenes with Eerie. Well, there's not two scenes with Eerie, there's two incidents with
Eerie. Oh, right, right, she brought her to bed, yeah. right.
And that was just, like, glossed over. She's just like, so then, like, she tried having sex with Eerie, and no. And then there was, like,
maybe
the thing that happened, like, more or less by accident, where she's masturbating and Eerie wakes up.
Yeah.
And that was just, like, stress relief, basically.
I just don't see this justifying itself. Okay. I'm sorry. Like, I don't. I mean, it's fine. It's just like, okay, Danny doesn't put an emphasis on it, but Martin is writing this book in a world where there is, you know, a gendered element and there is like a specific different viewpoint of lesbian relationships than other relationships, mm-hmm. right? So like, he would know it's a big deal. Not a big deal as in like, oh, it's a big deal, but like a deal as in it deserves different attention. For an audience.
Okay.
Like, I see where you're coming from. It's just, I don't think he was thinking, like, oh, Danny just is beyond gender. Like,
no, she's not.
And I know what you're saying. I just don't think that he was like, oh, well, whatever. I should have her have sex with someone random, and then that doesn't sate her. Like, was that really necessary?
Probably not.
Yeah. So the other couplings with women... We learn casually that Nim had sex with the Fowler twins at the same time, and they're women. Yeah. I don't know why two twins would be into fucking the same person. Like,
do I? But it's a thing. I don't know. Pornhub.com seems to think it's a huge thing, so I don't know.
But like the fact that it's all women doesn't really, for me, it doesn't really add anything extra. Like it wasn't. It's not like the scene was sexualized. No, like, Nim is just like, hey, I was fucking them and then I found out my dad's dead.
Yeah, I mean, but does it always have to have a point, right? Like,
no, and like, to me, like, people are, oh, this is such a horrible, like, male gaze scene. I'm like, well, it was an anecdote.
Yeah.
It wasn't a scene. We can hypothesize. Oh, didn't Ariane and Tyeen kink around at the same time?
When they were like 13? Yeah.
Uh huh.
They were, like, giggling over his penis, like, when they were 13 once. That's, like...
Yeah, and Ariane wasn't exactly describing it as, like, and then Tyene's wonderful boobies came out. Like...
And then she says, she says like, to Eris that, just, like, she's willing to share men with her cousins, but that's not clear that she means, like, having a threesome. It's just, like...
No, I don't think she did.
Care
I think
she my just cousins, meant, like, if... like, also sleep with people I sleep with.
No, just, like, you can fuck them. I don't care. We share everything. Yeah. Okay. But, like, that, again, to me, that wasn't, like, high, like, sexuality. It was just, like, remember that time I was 13 and thought penises were funny? Like,
yeah. I mean, they're planning to go further than he prematurely ejaculated because he was 13, right? So, I don't know.
The only other scene of this nature is Tyena and Cersei, and I super defend that.
I mean, because, like, the relationship in that case... I mean, you made a really good case in our Cersei podcast for Cersei, like, actually having a thing for Tyena. Like, really good case.
For Cersei being, like, a repressed, if not lesbian, at least, like, bisexual woman. Yeah. And she's such a misogynist that she would never consider this. But 100%, I see her.
Like, you know, she wants to have sex with Tyena, basically, but she can't see sex in anything but dominative terms.
And so it's a reclamation of her trauma and her rape at the same time. Like, this is how she has to see it. And, yeah, it's just like, I will defend it. I will.
Yeah.
She was working through some shit, guys.
It's the worst possible way because she's a horrible person.
And by the way, if you're a lesbian or bisexual woman listening to this and you're like, what the fuck, Kylie, I totally don't agree. I understand 100% why people are uncomfortable with it. It's just like my own takeaway. I defend it. And I think it's because I'm more into like closeted to herself Cersei readings than other people might be. And then I did think that this is like, you know, a reclamation of her sexual agency.
Through rape,
specifically with a woman, which is important specifically for Cersei, who is a misogynist.
Yeah. What a lovely story. Isn't Cersei wonderful? Okay.
Martin is 100% a straight dude writing the story. Like, it's pretty obvious. And this is just an area where
I think... But do you think he was trying there?
I think he was trying with Cersei and Tyene. I don't think he was trying with Dany and Eri. I just don't know. I just don't know what that was.
One thing I want to mention but not really touch on, one of the announcements is just like, why does Martin write sex so weird? Right? Like, what the fuck is up with all the weird sex scenes? It's always weird and kind of gross. I know. How are other people having sex?
Well, and like, I think it's just the idea that like, he's kind of creepy. There's like this, maybe Martin's just kind of this big old creep. Okay. Right? And I think that's where it comes from. Like, why is he talking about fat pink masts and shit? And it's like, I mean, I actually really like that sex scene. Not in like a evocative, I'm going to go masturbate kind of way as I'm reading it. Just in like, I think it did well at like.
Is this a genre problem? Do people expect all sex scenes to be erotic?
Oh, maybe it is. Maybe they expect smut in the middle of this stuff. Here's the thing, my dudes. I can't read smut and get turned on. I can't do it. Like, I am so distracted by how people write it because they're writing like hand movements and fingers, and I'm like, I'm losing track of limbs, and I'm just like trying to picture the logistics, and it's never erotic to me. So with Martin's sex scenes, I'm not like, ooh, and then Asha and, you know, her boyfriend pretended they were being raped, but they weren't. Like, I'm not like turned on by this stuff. So maybe the thing is that people read these scenes and they kind of expect that turn on to happen. Maybe.
I mean, sex is a weird thing, like, when you think about it. It's weird behavior.
It's nice, but like, no, yeah.
Just, like,
I mean,
it's kind of like pooping, you know? Like, there's nothing, like, just like, no, just like, it's a weird.
I'm gonna make a shirt that says sex is like pooping.
It's a weird thing when you really think about it, you know? Like, and often it's just kind of like awkward. And it doesn't turn out quite as smooth as you were hoping it would be. You know, like, sex is...
I'm sorry, I've never felt this way about my poop.
Sex is weird, is my point.
Sex can be a lot of things. It can be,
you know... The concept of sex really is kind of weird.
It is, but, like, I also just don't think it always has to be, like, this mind-blowing thing.
And especially
just,
when
like,
you have, like, two characters who don't really know what they're doing, like...
Sometimes it can be tepid, you know, like, it's fine.
A 16-year-old boy who's never had sex before, and a, like, 15-year-old girl whose only experience with sex is being raped by her father, like, that might be a little weird.
And I feel like they really did that sex scene in a good way. I'm sorry, like...
It might not be the most technically accomplished thing.
But, like, the idea that Sam thinks his penis is hilarious looking, like... That's the point, you know? So, I don't know. I don't really find him particularly creepy because the way he writes it is specifically not erotic. Mm-hmm. It's just, like, in the character's mindset. Or, like, the whole, like, Asha, she's just, like, having sex to ignore her problems, right? Like, that's literally what she's doing. And then she's just, like, so into it and so happy to be getting drilled that when they finish, she's like, oh, it kind of, like, it felt like our bodies were connected. I can't tell whose part is whose. Like, that can happen.
She, like, kind of likes Carl, so.
Yeah, she's happy to be fucking her boyfriend. Let her do it, you know? I don't know. I feel like it's not that weird. I don't. I mean, I understand why people read it, especially people who have read fic and smut, why people would read it and be like, what the fuck is this? But, like, I don't know. I wouldn't call the way that Martin writes sex scenes as a problem overall. No. I have problems with specific sex scenes, such as Dandy and Eri, such as Dandy and Drogon. Honestly, Dandy.
What about Hildy and her turnips?
What about Hildy and her turnips?
What do you think of that scene? It's a rape scene.
Yeah. What the fuck are they doing? Like, why is that in there?
It's there to make, Lord Bracken look bad.
So, is it like humor?
Jamie thinks it's kind of funny.
Do we need a rape to be characterizing him as bad? I mean, out of the myriad other things Jamie could have walked in on that kind of makes him seem like an asshole. Or is it just, like, the reality of the world?
Like, because, like, Jamie's kind of reaction to the whole thing is kind of, like, very Jamie. Like, he's not...
Mm-hmm. Well, Jamie, Mr. Anti-Rape, according to everyone in the
fandom. Well, he is, but he's also, like, very accepting of certain things as they are.
And I don't think he really understands female sexual agency either. As evidenced by his massive Madonna whore complex. So, I don't
Jamie
know.
Jamie definitely, like, isn't pro-rape, not even in a passive sense. He's just kind of, like, accepting of some things sometimes. Like, he doesn't challenge fundamental assumptions.
Which is fine. Not every character
Like, when
needs
Rayella
to.
Is, like, literally screaming and clearly in pain. Well, he's like, this is obviously bad. But, like, when you have something like Hildy and her turnips, where it's, like, a little nicer, I suppose you can say. Like, what's the term for that? Like, it's less likely to physically damage you. I don't know. it looks nicer. Certainly no less rape. But even like in that, like he has like a kind of attitude towards Hildy that shows him for like, he has this massive amount of whore complex, but he's not like fundamentally misogynist. You know, if that makes sense.
He's, you know what it is? It's that, he's not.
He's not a complete asshole.
No, fuck. It's ambivalent sexism. He's not like, oh my God, why am I not remembering? It's benevolent. He's benevolently sexist. That's what it is. He's benevolent.
How is the Madonna whore of complex benevolently sexist?
That one isn't, but I'm saying overall, like, it's just, he's not the kind of guy who's like going to hop out of bushes and rape women. But, I mean, he's benevolently sexist maybe in Westeros, right? Like, so for that, a Madonna whore complex would be more benevolent than, like, I guess, however Randall Tarley is probably thinking about women.
He doesn't, like, the way that, like, you know, someone like Gregor Clegane or Randall Tarley.
Actually, no, he's more ambiguous, like, ambivalently sexist. No, he's pretty sexist.
Yeah, but, like, he's not, like, a dick about it.
He's systemically sexist. He's conditioned to be sexist.
And he doesn't like hold being raped against women the same way that other characters do. Like, even when they're raping them themselves, they hold it against them, some characters, right?
Yeah, no, you're right about that, but I don't think Hildy's turnips needed to happen.
I mean, this is the thing where, like, things in the chapters of POV characters always happen in service of that POV character. But a lot of the time, it's a woman being raped in service of a male POV character. Sometimes it happens in the services of a female POV character too, but like there's something inherently uncomfortable about the concept of a woman being raped in order to service a man's character.
Yeah.
Even though that's kind of an inevitable consequence of fiction, that things happen to background people in order to...
It's also an inevitable consequence because he said he didn't... Well, he probably said at some point he didn't want to rape someone that we're reading the point of view of. Like, or at least consciously, because, I mean, he kind of totally did with Danny. Mm. It's an issue, but I think against the pattern of what he's exploring with the patriarchy and what the takeaways are, which I still believe there are progressive feminist takeaways of this book series, I find it more on the forgivable side, but it doesn't mean it's like we need to just ignore that this is a problem, you know? And we'll see. Again, we super need Winds of Winter. I feel like things are getting better. I know Hildy's turnips are in A Feast for Crows, but I feel like things are getting better. Or was that his Dance with Dragons chapter? Where? Hildy's turnips.
Dance with Dragons.
Yeah. But, like, still, it's moving in the right direction, mm-hmm. I think. Maybe. We'll find out. At a time TBD. Anyway, we're getting pretty long here. Like, really long. So there is, like, a couple more general ones, but...
Oh, my.
There's only one I want to focus on as a close, which is, what do you think about the claim that George R. R. Martin made a mistake in overestimating his readers in regards to, like, misogynistic shallow interpretations with Sansa and things of that nature?
That, like... The fact that there'll be shallow readings of your text is inevitable, and the more popular something is, the more common it is. Like, think of, like, fucking Jane Austen. You know?
I don't want to fuck
You know what I mean. Don't do that. Like Shakespeare plays. Like, people think that Romeo and Juliet is, like, portraying Romeo and Juliet in a good light, you know? And it's like relationship goals, which is like, that is not what Shakespeare was trying to say! You know?
No, he's trying to say, look at these fucking idiots.
So, like, this isn't unique to George R. R. Martin. I think this is, like, a frustration that a lot of authors have, and I don't see how it could ever go away.
My own thing is, like, I think he's not responsible for readers' idiocy, or sexism, or prejudices, or whatever it is that they're coming in with. He's also not responsible for the readers that come in who are, like, leather-pantsing these mass murderers, you know? But... At the same time, I think he could do a slightly better job of being a little more cognizant about how dialogues are unfolding when it comes to answering his questions. And that's not really, maybe that's not fair, but when your voice is sort of this vehicle for this much, like, such a cultural thing, there is a little bit of an added responsibility with that, you know?
Yeah.
I might not be expressing that well.
And another thing
that, like,
is, like, you know, us and how fucking snobby we sound right now. We're like, are we, like, these two assholes who are sitting here thinking that we are the only ones who have the answers to this question? Like, we know what George R. Martin really thinks.
I don't think I know what he's doing at all. Like, I'm just, based on the pattern of his writing, this is what I believe, and this is, like, how I place the benefit of the doubt. And maybe Winds of Winter comes out, and it doubles down on the shit that we don't enjoy, or it just does, it's not as successful ripping into this, and we're gonna be like, ugh.
That's disappointing.
That's disappointing, and we wish that hadn't happened. Yeah. I don't think we're, like, irrational for arriving at the places that we've arrived at.
Yeah.
And I certainly don't think, like, how I feel about A Song of Ice and Fire is more valid than how other people feel.
Well,
it's
I
just
sometimes
I will
think
defend
so.
How I feel. I think it depends. Yeah. Like, if you're if we're talking about, like, you know, some of these theories, then yeah. But like if you're gonna argue with me about was Joffrey the intended target of the wine at the Purple Wedding, then, like, I don't have an interest in debating with that. Like, totally. You can listen to our theories podcast if you want to hear us be really snobby. But no, like, I mean, at the end of the day, I know this is my opinion about a book series, right? Mm-hmm. And I think, how many times have we said, like, we could be wrong about Martin?
I don't want to think about me being wrong about Martin, but I've said it a few times. I don't want to be wrong about Martin.
Depending on how Arianne's storyline winds up, like, that could be it for us anyway. not like, oh, if she actually does marry Aegon, because we're both super skeptical about that, but, like,
no, she
I'm
could.
Talking
it
more
depends on how it would happen.
I'm just talking, like, if she has a really bad dismissive ending, I'll feel pretty pissed. And he could easily, like, I could easily see this being, like, Winds of Winter comes out and we feel a little betrayed by whatever is going on.
Well, like, I think
it's just, you know, for now,
there's so many expectations now that everybody will feel a little betrayed, because there's no way that,
oh, 100%.
There's something that will turn out not the way that you wanted.
But look, the way Julia and I are engaged with The Song of Ice and Fire, it's not that we're engaged in this way because we're so much smarter. It's because we're specifically interested in feminism and, like, the way this is constructed. And we see this interpretation of it, and we have these takeaways that really, really work for us with our experiences. Mm-hmm. And our own worldviews. That's not going to line up with everyone else. I think, like, you and I actually forget how weirdly aligned our views are sometimes. And how we, like, fucking share a brain. Like, I think we don't appreciate that enough.
The last thing I want to say is just, like, kind of working off your point. There, like, Death of the Author is taken way too far by many people, but there is something to it. Like, there is value in takeaways that you can take from a text, even if that contradicts the intended intent of the author.
Look, man, I think Game of Thrones is a pile of shit, but the amount of engagement I've had defending Cersei's character on that show, like, I don't care if it was intentional or not. I don't care if she was supposed to be a villain in season 5. Like, 100% she's not. And she's kind of the only feminist character in season 5. And I have gotten so much out of defending that point, you know? So, yeah, I completely agree with that, too.
Like, just because Martin doesn't intend things doesn't mean that what meaning we find from it is meaningless.
There's implications, right? There's unintended implications, but there's still results for some readers. Like, that's the thing.
Exactly,
and I'll
like how
it.
Cersei proves that women can't be political rulers. That's a possible takeaway.
So you've kind of heard us, like, hedge for 2 hours this. So on that note, I wanted to read a couple of reviews that we've had. Julia and I have been asking you guys to write reviews. It really helps us get exposure. Yeah. Rate us, review us. We keep saying that. And then I haven't read any of them because I'm a terrible, horrible person. So then I was finally, the podcast app updated and I saw them for the first time. First of all, we have 28 ratings. And of the 28 ratings, only one is 1 star.
Oh, wow.
And one is 4 star and the rest are 5 stars. So thank you. Like, what? I feel like you should knock a star off just for the podcast that we did all about fanfic. But
we were feeling really bad, okay?
And we've been getting reviews since 2016. So, like, since a year ago. So I'm just going to read a few of them and hopefully we'll get through them, like, in a timely fashion when we, you know, are recording more episodes. And please, if you haven't left us a rating and review, this really does help our exposure. Yeah. And we you know, as much as it seems like we're soups casual and dismissive about things, we actually kind of do take it a little seriously, like what we say about the show and, you know, just sort of disengagement. We really like it, you know, so hopefully if it's entertaining for you. Anyway, Jamie Lannister, or Jamie Esther, Jamie Esther, said, 5 stars, I needed this. I didn't realize how much I needed to hear an opposing voice about the show I used to love, adapted from the books I will always love. When popular opinion turns into a poisonous echo chamber, as it has in regards to the show, there must be an antidote. Thank you, Julie and Kylie, for being my antidote.
No prob.
No prob, Jamie Esther. Serene Shireen said, an excellent counterpoint as the headline. This podcast is great for people who, like me, have grown dissatisfied with Game of Thrones, but can't exactly articulate why, especially in the face of universal acclaim. I gave up mid-season 4 and tuned back season 5 just in time to be traumatized by Sansa Stark's storyline. Kylie and Julia, our intrepid hosts, take stock in each storyline of the season by some way of a very fundamental criteria. The setting, the characters, and the arc's thematic elements. And if it actually makes sense. There is some comparison to A Song of Ice and Fire, but the point stands. Game of Thrones season 5 and 6 collapse under the barest of scrutiny. It's fascinating to listen to, and I've learned a lot about storytelling and writing from their thorough dissection of D&D's failures. Oh my god, Serene, you are prolific. There are also several episodes discussing my favorite book plot lines. Kylie and Julia put together a fun, conversational, insightful podcast, and it's a delight to listen to them, whether they're rhapsodizing about Dorne and the Martells, or, charmingly, complaining about the Ironborn. Also, prepare yourself to start caring about Dorne and the Martells way more than you would have ever anticipated. That was a long one, so I'll cap it at 2, but I'll get through a few more coming
up. Thank
you,
both of you. Those are lovely.
Those are really nice. That, like, made my day that we got you to care about Dorne.
Yeah, it's like mission in life accomplished.
I know. All right, on that note, we are so long. I hope you enjoyed this double feature or something. But yeah, otherwise...
This is pretty normal, actually. You're thinking of the show episode reviews.
That's true, that's true. All right, Carol Award voting. We're hoping to have... next week,
yes,
which should happen. So check back on thefandamentals.com for your Carol Awards. For anyone who doesn't know, they are a satirical award show for Game of Thrones.
They're satirical.
That includes categories such as
I've been taking them seriously this whole
most
time.
Most stylish plot armor, best improbable impossibility.
Yeah.
Saint Tyrion's biggest fan. You know, stuff like that.
Yeah.
It's going to be a lot of fun. And then we also, I've designed new merch. I got to get it up on the store. I've been so bad lately, but I'm also like moving in with my sister and I have 3 cats now. So my life is kind of complicated, but check back on fandamentals.com for new merch. Cause we're going to have that up. We have a plausible impossibilities. I talked to Elizabeth about helping me design a character gumbo shirt. So it's going to be a really, really good time. Other than that, we just want to thank you all for listening, and we will talk to you next time.
Yeah,
whenever
hopefully you
that
don't
is.
Hate us now.
No, please don't. All right, goodbye, everyone.
Bye.
And I think that's the feedback I actually got for my own fic that I wrote, because I wrote the smut scene with Ryko and Buttercup.
I can't believe her name is Buttercup. Like,
acting out this horrible, like, misogynistic fantasy. And she's too stupid to get what he's doing. Like, yeah, so I don't know. I think we just have different things. I actually wrote legit smut between Cora and Asami in half the pieces. Mm-hmm. And I got good feedback for that, but I also didn't talk about technicalities. It was just kind of like, and then this happened.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
I kind of wrote a sex sequence.
You did. You did. You wrote 2, yeah. Actually.
Same people.
Between Rona and Ormond, yeah. OTPs. And you had Arianne get eaten out by Jerry.
Yeah, that was, like, no details.
No details. It just, like, happened, and then she's like, get the fuck out of my bed.
I got princess shit to do.
I have princess duties. Excuse me. God, we are getting off on a weird tangent. We're not getting off. We're getting off on a weird tangent.